When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Welcome to Upfront. I'm Chloe Morgan.
And I'm Rachel O'Sullivan.
The Lionesses are back, but not to winning ways, unfortunately. They played out an underwhelming draw against Sweden on Friday, which has left a few people concerned. But should they be? We also recap some other mixed results for the home nations, Jess Fishlott's continued greatness notwithstanding, and rate Ireland's chances as they host the Lionesses tomorrow night in Dublin. Rach, whereabouts are you, mate? Because we're not in the studio today. I think you might be in the family land.
Family land. I am back home in Ireland, back in Dublin, ready for the game tomorrow. Nervous, excited, but nice to be home.
You're going to be destroyed, mate. I'll tell you that for free. Destroyed.
I hope you underestimate Ireland like that.
We'll definitely get stuck into that game. All right, before we get stuck into the weekend, Friday's fixtures. What's your moment of the weekend, mate?
Chloe, we were talking about this before the pod, when we talked about what we did at the weekend.
Yes.
We didn't really do anything.
No, quite boring.
It was really
welcome
nice.
Welcome to your 30s.
No, actually, we had a weekend off, which was like so rare. I can't remember the last time we didn't have anything on a Saturday and a Sunday. And it's not really a whole moment, but actually, just having a nice little chill Saturday was really nice.
That's so sweet. What did you and Seth get up to?
Nothing. Sat on the couch. I mean, we were obviously working like on our laptops and doing stuff like that, but actually just like, you know, we went out for dinner. Like, it was just really relaxed. It was lovely.
That's very so domestic. Weird. I didn't get my invite for the dinner.
Yeah, that's, I just figured, just didn't want to.
As official third wheel, it just seems really unusual that you wouldn't message WhatsApp, just say, Chloe, you know, we're heading out later.
8 p.m.
Wear something nice. Like,
what did you get up to, Chloe? What was your moment of the weekend?
I was at a wedding on Friday and I was really, really annoyed because it was a lesbian wedding and it was absolutely stunning. Like, it was a gorgeous day.
At the same time as football?
At the same time as football.
And they're lesbians.
She's a massive football fan as well.
That's shocking.
So, yeah, not happy, but also very happy. Beautiful day, celebration of, you know, LGBTQ plus community. It was absolutely beautiful. But I would say my moment of the weekend, obviously watching the game back, the under-23s in the crowd for the Lionesses game. I mean, I know they obviously, like, pay attention to the Lionesses. They're probably at most of their games, but I just thought it was really nice, like, because they're so collaborative now, went away together, you know, built these lovely friendships. Like, it was really lovely seeing them in the crowd. So that was my England moment, but a personal moment, celebrating love. Obviously.
Also, England moment, loved the BSL training tops,
yes.
Sign-off training tops, very cool.
Such a vibe.
And they had some members of the Deaf team on, I think, as well at halftime, but they were very cool shirts. and reminded me of I remember how I learned to spell my name like that as well. And I was like, now I need to go back and remind myself how to do it again. But yeah, I thought that was really cool. That was very kind of cool shirts, very cool thing to raise awareness of. So that'd be another kind of football moment.
I want one. I'll go out and those bad boys. Like, they're stunning. They're stunning bit of kit.
How do you do it? Get your name on the back and everything. Brilliant.
It's such a good idea. Marketing team, well done. 101. Okay, let's get stuck in then. England, a stuttering start to the Euros qualifying. I mean, they were held to the 1-1 draw against Sweden at Wembley. Alessia Russo headed in Lauren James's cross, but Rolfo, I can never say Rolfo, it always gets stuck in my mouth. Rolfo.
Why?
I don't know why. It's one of those things.
Rolfo.
What's wrong with you? It doesn't sit well. Anyway, she equalised when she got round the back of Lucy Bronze. Carney said England weren't concentrating. If England were switched on, Sweden's goal doesn't happen. Lucy Bronze wasn't paying attention at the back post. So, There's a couple of themes, I think, to kind of pick out in this game. One, I think, was the kind of, there was a flatness, I think. There was a fan flatness that I think was there. You're not convinced about that point. We will definitely debate this until the ends of the earth. And then there's kind of like an England flatness. I mean, let's talk about the performance first. I mean, were you happy with that performance, or did you feel actually there was cause for concern?
I wasn't overly concerned. I don't think that was, you know, of course it wasn't their best performance, which happens. I think there's been, I find the reaction really interesting. I do think some of the reaction is very over the top. You know, people making out like it's some disaster, which I find really interesting because, well, it's not. Yeah, there was a flatness in the performance. That happens. You know, they looked rusty. They looked like they hadn't played with each other for a little while. Which is normal. I think if you look across, in fact, a lot of the results, there were some interesting results across the board from a lot of national teams. You know, Germany beat Austria 3-2, but Austria 2-0 up. Austria, who England absolutely battered in the previous international window. Italy beat the Netherlands, who England absolutely battered in the previous international window. So, you know, consistency, I think, is something that we don't see it really from a lot of national teams recently. I don't know what it is. But I don't think it's something to be concerned about. I think the Nations League format and the new qualifying format was designed to be more difficult, to come up against more difficult teams. And it's absolutely delivering. Third, fourth and fifth in the world in the same group. It's called the group of death for a reason. Sweden are a very organised side. And I think sometimes we put all the blame on England, which who didn't play their best. And there are issues to discuss. But also Sweden set up really well. And sometimes you also have to counterbalance that with the fact that Sweden's tactics were very good. They'd set up to, you know, cut out Kira Walsh from the game, which they did very well. They set up to target one of the central defenders, which Gerhardsen spoke about post-match, which worked very well. So there's an element of good tactics from Sweden. England, I think, a bit flat, but also struggling to understand or figure out how to get around those tactics in the game. But I wouldn't be like massively concerned. I don't think it's that worrying, personally.
Do you think that like, the expectations then are so high?
Yes.
I mean, before August World Cup final, England had lost just once in 38 games under Wiegmann. And then in the last 10 matches, they've won 6, drawn 1 and been beaten in 3, including the 1-0 Spain lost in Sydney. But do you think there's just a kind of like a mainstream view that because they kind of had this massive success at the Euros, we were talking before the pod, you know, they obviously got to the World Cup final, but it wasn't the greatest route to the World Cup final. It was a little bit flat points. There were games that, you know, it could have easily gone either way. The Nigeria game, everyone would be thinking if Nigeria had gone through, fine, fair result. But do you feel like there's just this kind of, you know, the expectations are just that they'll just kind of carry on in this kind of like world of glory, this era of glory, I suppose, under Wiegmann.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're right. And I think that dominance is going to be hard for a team. Like, I know like the US had it for a long time. But I think that dominance is going to be really hard for a team to have going forward, you know, given the investment in the game across the board. Yes, England have massively improved, but they're not going to, the trajectory isn't always just going to be up. You've also got other teams improving, which makes it harder for England. And I was saying this to you before, what I find really interesting is when people look at this and go, yeah, but, you know, where's this team gone? That we're in the World Cup final, won the Euros. During the World Cup, everyone was saying England weren't playing very well. And there were so many excuses for England's success that people tried to make. Yeah, but this team wasn't playing. Or yeah, but you could have gone out, but it went, you went through on penalties. And now people are like comparing this England to what about the World Cup? And it's like, well, you thought they weren't playing very well then either. So I don't understand what you're comparing them to. I think what England have been very good at is tactics. And I think, you know, we've seen it with teams over the years is once you figure out those tactics or you figure out a way to play against a team, you have to rethink your tactics. And that's a hard thing to do, you know. And I think you look at, I don't know, when Leicester won the Premier League, right? Once people figured out how to play them, suddenly they weren't as potent. They can't, you can't sustain that type of, and look, I'm sure I'll be told I'm wrong, but as the game improves and the tactics improve and the managers improve, you're constantly having to shift things. And, you know, we saw it in the Euros, everything was the same, worked really well. Once people figured that out and once things weren't going as well, we had injuries, whatever, during the World Cup, Wiegmann had to tactically shift things around. Then she was being, people were giving out that she was making too many changes. So you can't win. Do you know what I mean? But I just find it really interesting. That expectation is so high that you win a Euros, anything less is failure. And I just find the reaction quite interesting.
I mean, you talked a little bit about tactics there, and I absolutely 100% agree. I think the more you play, the more you adapt, the more you sort of have these kind of games of chess between different nations. And
absolutely.
Yeah, people are getting more alive to what Serena Wiegmann is doing. I mean, you know, we saw in the Euros, there was that, you know, she was one of the first managers to just have a consistent squad. She'd, you know, bring on subs at the consistent time. And
It was that.
So I suppose now she's started to mix it up a bit. It is kind of like, okay, well, I'm going to do this. You're going to do this. I'm going to do this in return. But like, if we think about some of the things, I suppose, that weren't working in the game on Friday. I mean, a massive part of that does seem to be the sort of shakiness of the back line. So, I mean, we had a question in from Soph on Instagram. She said, what's the future of England's back line? Who do you see as the current second choice right back after Bronze? Because obviously there is a lot of finger pointing at Bronze. She wasn't marking, I don't want to say it again, Rolfo at the back.
We need to go off air.
It's the
practice.
R's. It's the R's that really get me.
Rolfo.
Rolfo. Stop it. So obviously the sort of goal, have a look at the goal. Not you, Rach, just for listeners who haven't seen it. But yeah, I mean, Bronze completely lost her at the back post. It came from a throw-in. And then she obviously, I mean, she's looking... So I looked over this like a couple of times. Bronze is 100% just ball-watching the entire time. Doesn't check her shoulder once in the kind of... There's about 10 seconds of play between the throw-in and the goal. And then Earps, I think, does fairly well to try and, you know, footwork, try and get back to the back post. And unfortunately, it just sort of goes in between her legs. But yeah, what would you kind of say would be the second choice to Bronze if we're going to be so critical and say that error is going to cost her shirt?
Well, I think, first of all, I wouldn't be looking at England's back line entirely. I actually thought, like, during the World Cup, the central pairing of Jess Carter and Alex Greenwood was really good. I actually thought Lotta Wubben-Moy and Alex Greenwood played quite well. I actually don't think there was any major errors on their part. I think tactically they were being targeted. Yeah, but they were being targeted by the tactics of Sweden was to target one of those central defenders in the game, leaving the other one a bit more isolated. And I found there were times where Lotta Wubben-Moy would have to come across and cover the Lucy Bronze gap that had been left because she'd gone bombing up the field. Now, Lotta Wubben-Moy, I think, struggled a couple of times with balls over the top, but she's very good with one-on-one with the player. Mm-hmm. So I actually thought it was less about them making mistakes and more about them dealing with the tactics that was trying to isolate one of the central defenders, which I thought worked quite well. But you're right. I thought, you know, we've often talked about England's left, haven't we? And now suddenly we're like, hang on, what about England's right? Mm-hmm. Left is looking okay, I think, at the moment. Less worried about that. But yeah, where is the alternative for the right back? And I thought that was interesting then that Maya Letizia wasn't brought along in this camp because I thought she played quite well when she came in for England in the previous camp. She's a potential option and she's versatile, which I think is really beneficial. But that's a really interesting question, is who's next in line for that right back position. I agree about the goal that I was sat there. That was the post I was at shooting. And I watched the ball come in and I'm like, there's nobody here. I can still see Lucy Bronze's face as she turned around and was a bit like, oh, shit. Bursting her out to try and get back. But with Rolfo coming in at that speed, there was, as you said, wasn't really much Mary Earps could do. If someone's coming in and heading at that ball at that speed, it's very, very difficult. But that was, yeah, you're right. It was a mistake on England's part. And there were a couple of times where the space that gets left, and this is the thing when you're playing in England, you know there's going to be space left by the right back. And I think teams are getting better at exploiting that. And it then pulls your central defenders where they shouldn't 100%. Be because I have to then cover that. So
when you look at sort of where they were, even for that, the Blackstonians chance, and that could have easily been, I mean, it should have been a 2-1 situation, really. That means Sweden could have quite easily walked away with the points.
I mean,
there.
But then you could also say England's got shouldn't have been ruled offside, that ball in from Alex Greenwood.
Yeah, absolutely.
So if you've got to play...
If you kind of focus on the sort of like defensive line, though, when you look at how high again the wing backs were sort of getting, exposing, you know, Lotta Wiebenmoy just centrally in the middle, it was a one-on-one situation. And you think that ball initially came from a goal kick. It was only, I think, 3 passes that got Blasinius into a situation where she was one-on-one with Earps, and in a goal in any other circumstance with her shooting boots on would have converted. And that would have been us in quite a lot of shit. People would have been definitely...
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we've already like tempered expectations,
just
I think, with
quiz,
one.
Football. Everything's over.
We're out of the Olympics. We're out of the Euros. We did all right in the World Cup. But I think we'll just have to wait for the next World Cup to roll around in 2026 now, because why bother? 2027, is it? But yeah, it's... there were some definitely causes for concern. But one of
maybe not that partnership.
Yes.
Do you know
okay.
what I mean? I think they're both... individually good, and maybe when you put a Leah Williamson in with one of them, or Jess Carter in with Alex Greenwood. So like the point I was trying to make was I wouldn't be overly worried about the entirety of England's backline, if you know mm-hmm. what I mean. But I think you're right in terms of the right back positioning. We need to be seeing more flexibility there, because there needs to be other options at right back at times.
Yeah, 100%. I think we need to adapt to that and also understand that teams are going to exploit those kind of areas now, because they know what we're getting up to. They know what Sazzy Weegs is up to. Do you know what I mean?
No, Chloe, stop it.
Sorry, I'll stop trying to push it.
Trying to make Fetch happen. It's not going to happen.
Right, so we kind of talked like before about sort of like, you know, the expectations need to be kind of lowered. Was this just one of those games where actually 1-1 was the right result? Sweden played a fantastic game. Tactically, they got it bang on. And isn't this kind of what the qualifying process is designed to do? We wanted it to be tougher. We didn't want, you know, the sort of big, you know, top 10 teams, top 5 teams to be absolutely smashing through these smaller teams, kind of creating these really kind of uncompetitive environments that we, you know, don't really sort of benefit anyone, I suppose. But do you think that sort of that is what we should just be... Like, why are we moaning about it? We asked for this kind of thing.
You asked for it. You made your bed.
Now lie in it.
And enjoy it. It's what I expected from mm-hmm. the group. I expected it to be difficult. And I think some, like, you know, I know the last time England played Sweden, it was 4-0. But even in that game, even in that first half, like, it was such a competitive game. And there was a moment, God, I think it was Sina Blackstenius again, where... a header in the second half of that game was tipped onto the crossbar by Mary Earps. And I remember us all thinking that's where it was almost 2-1 to Sweden. Mm-hmm. 1-1 to Sweden. And it was those moments where a game can shift on a knife edge. And I think there's always an opportunity for a team to exploit it and somehow go 4-0 up. And actually, I think sometimes there's moments where the balance might shift. And I just think on the other night, Friday night, the balance was so finely poised either way. And had that Russo goal been allowed, and, you know, had Blackstenius gotten it, you feel like the game could have shifted entirely a different direction. So the point of these games is that they're close and tight. And I think we're going to see that, you know, in this group. And I think the same with Ireland as well. I know Ireland are obviously ranked way down, but I do think you're going to see tighter results and maybe not, mm-hmm. you know, England dominating 4-5-0, unless maybe it's against Ireland. Then, you know, then that's kind of what we should be expecting from these groups.
That's what I'd like to see. England just dominating.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Okay, let's have a look at some of the other games that happened this weekend. We had Wales 4-0 Croatia. The legend of Jess Fishlock scored twice. The goal celebrations were absolutely wild. She said earlier in the week that this is probably her last campaign. She's 37 now and could win her 150th cap for her country against Kosovo tomorrow. She said that she nearly quit after losing their 2022 World Cup playoff. They lost in the final moments of extra time to Switzerland. Rach, how important do you think she's been for Welsh football? It kind of feels like a silly question in a way.
Well, yeah, I mean, she there's no better player to kind of encapsulate a nation than Jess Fishlock in Wales. Like, you think Wales, you think Jess Fishlock. She's,
I think of her iconic hair.
On her hair. but no, I just think she's that kind of, there's so much passion in that squad. That's something I always get from Welsh players, and maybe, you know, similar vibes being from a small nation. The passion when you stand on the international stage, and you can see it every single time she plays. And there's such good leaders, her being one of them, in that squad that have seen them through this kind of journey over the years of almost qualifying. And I just, she's one of those players that I really, really hope Wales can qualify. You know, for players like that, that have been so good for the broader women's game. Like, if you're looking at the game as a whole, she's been such an incredible player. So players like that, that you just think you deserve to go to a major tournament and experience a major tournament. So I really hope she does, because she's, yeah, as I said, she's kind of, you think Wales, you think Jess Fishlock.
Yeah, when she sort of said that she was going to be retiring and this is her last campaign, I kind of thought she meant this is going to be her last year. Is it like she was going to stop in July? And I was thinking, but what if you guys make it? What if this is like...
Keep going. Yeah, she's not going anywhere.
You've done it too early. But yeah, in terms of sort of like how iconic she has been, I mean, she's a massive hero of the game, played in Australia, France, Germany, the WSL. She's also an amazing pundit, got her coaching badges. Yeah, I mean, she's been with Wales since 2006. I think I was looking up, she's got 42 goals for her country, which is no mean feat in the midfield. And also, she was awarded the 2018 Birthday Honours Member of the Order of the British Empire for services to women's football and the LGBTQ plus community. So iconic both on and off the pitch. Don't retire too soon, Jess. Also, when you do retire, we'll have you on the pod. Just saying.
Absolutely.
100%. Yesterday, Sophie Ingle also announced that she is stepping down as Wales captain after 9 years. She was 23. Oh my God, what a baby. Baby captain. When she was made captain and has played 136 times for Wales. I was going to say, how will she be remembered? But as far as, you know, we were kind of talking about this on...
She's sticking around.
Yeah, she's not really going anywhere.
No, she's just giving the armband away.
Yeah, she's just like, do you know what? Like, I don't really want the extra responsibility. There's a lot going on at Chelsea at the moment. Like, yeah, I'm just, you know, I don't mind taking a back seat. Do you know what I mean?
I feel like it might be kind of, I don't know, fresh start vibes. Mm. You know, new manager in, new campaign. Maybe she feels like that's the switch the team needs. I don't know. But like, she's been incredible servant for Wales as captain for so long. Another player, like, you know, when we talk about leaders in the Welsh squad, there's been so many of those kind of players that have really driven the squad and driven the standards and driven the passion. So unusual announcement, because I was scrolling through the article being like, Jesus, is she retired entirely? Oh no, she's not. Oh no, she's still there. Oh, she's giving the oh, she's giving the armband. Okay. So look, it's an opportunity for probably a younger player to have the opportunity she did and to lead the team. And, you know, maybe it'll be another spark for the team and they'll qualify.
Yeah, she's like the Steph Horton, I suppose, of the Lionesses. Yeah. It's one of those, like, she's sort of, you know, making way, I suppose, for the new era, the new generation. Yeah. It kind of feels like Wales is going through that kind of moment that England did a couple of years back, when there was that kind of, like, fresh, you know, new manager in, head of, like, sort of some of these big campaigns, looking to actually sort of get into, you know, one of these big major tournaments at some point soon. And, yeah, they need, I suppose, that you know, fresh eyes, fresh perspective, yeah, fresh legs kind of thing. Right, Serbia, Scotland, 0-0. One of the most exciting games of the weekend. Scotland haven't won in 8 matches and were very flat in this one. They are the top ranked team in this group. Serbia arguably should have been awarded a goal. Scotland's keeper Lee Gibson spilled a comfortable catch and looked like she gathered the ball behind her goal line. We've all been there, Lee. Don't dwell on it. How much do you think Scotland rely on Erin Cuthbert? It sort of seems like they often sort of look to her for these sort of moments of creativity, which you can totally understand, given that is her That's a forte.
Yeah, but I mean, I think what frustrates me about the Scotland team, like particularly back when, you know, Jen Beattie and Kim Little were still playing and they qualified for major tournaments and you felt like that was the shift and they were gaining momentum and they were going to carry on, you know, improving. And it feels like they've gone backwards a little bit. And it's quite frustrating because there's a lot of quality in that squad. And yes, they'll rely on Aaron Cuthbert, but there is a lot of quality there for Scotland to be able to do better. And I think managerially, I think maybe they need a refresh personally. I think he's not getting the best out of that squad. And it's a shame because, I mean, look, I was there when Ireland were the ones that prevented them from going to the World Cup. And you could see the devastation. And they just, again, like Wales, they're a team that deserve to be making it into major tournaments, and to draw 0-0 against Serbia is not ideal. You expect Scotland to, you'd expect them to be in the top two of that group. And I think should they not be, it's when it gets difficult with qualifiers and you go into playoffs, and if you're bottom of B and C, you know, it's more difficult because you're going to be playing teams potentially better than you then in your playoffs. And I find Scotland quite frustrating because they should be doing better. And I'd say the team probably feel that, looking around at each other going, we know we're better than this and we're good enough to be getting through and beating these teams and we're not. So it's an interesting one. It's a frustrating one. And I'm not sure Pedro is able to get the best out of that squad.
Oof. Bold. Bold Sorry. Takes. That's Sorry, what we wanted. Pedro. What we wanted. Cutthroat Mondays. The next game, rates your lot, Northern Ireland.
Chloe, you're so lucky we're not in the studio together.
Also struggled to
because I would reach across and slap you. Just to clarify, Northern Ireland are not my lot.
I couldn't help myself. They struggled to a goalless draw. They couldn't get past Malta on Friday night. That wasn't my impression of a Northern Ireland accent. Simone McGill showed her class again and seemed to have scored in the first half, but the ref ruled it out after deciding McGill handballed it in the build-up. I know, there's been a couple of decisions that have gone against people this weekend.
That's so rare, like in women's football.
Christ, that just never, we never have controversial calls, you know, refs, VAR, that kind of thing. That's wild. But yeah, it's important that Scotland and Northern Ireland do well in these because topping these qualifying groups give these sides a much better chance of qualifying for Euro 2025. Yeah, it's all about the groupings and which group you go into and which teams you then play in the second part of it. It's an absolute mess. We did it's get convoluted. Sophie Downey on before to try and explain the whole process. We've completely forgotten. I think we need a refresh course.
Basically, but like you're going to end up playing. So like for Ireland, if they come last, they're in League A and it means they'll have a playoff against a team in League C, which arguably they should be able to beat. And then they'll play a playoff against someone in League B. So it's like, basically, you don't want to be playing against a team that's a league above you or have topped their group, for example. You'd rather be playing against a team that's below you and maybe has come bottom of their group. And do you know that kind of way? That would be a bit less stressful. So it's, yeah, doing well in these groups is really important. And also potentially you can then get yourself back into the league above, and it's convoluted, but I think that was the whole point of the Nations League, wasn't it? And as we've established, it's delivering.
It is delivering, and it's going to be delivering tomorrow. England versus Ireland. I can't wait. I honestly can't wait. I feel like it's a head-to-head between me and you, in a way.
Ireland, is it though?
Yeah, kind of. Like, it's kind of like a battle of the nations type vibe. Like,
but not the home nations, Chloe, just to clarify. Thank you.
No, not the home nations. Is Scotty going to be determining who wins this game?
No, so we had a discussion about this. And given he's half English and half Irish, we didn't want to put that kind of pressure on him. So he's at home see. Chilling out, being looked after.
Okay, right, fine. All right,
I don't think it's fair. He's turning 12. Like, I just don't, he doesn't need that kind of pressure in his life.
Yeah, he's getting on, to be fair. Yeah, fine. Ireland were decent in their defeat to France. Set pieces caused a few problems, but they showed a good resolve to not let the game get away from them. They had a really good chance to level it near the end when Leanne Kiernan shot, but she should have squared it to Katie McCabe. I mean, if there's one player that you should definitely deliver the ball to,
Free
it's Katie McCabe.
In the box.
Yeah, I can only imagine the kind of conversations and the frustration that
she
came
literally
out of
did
Katie
it on
McCabe.
The pitch. She dropped her knees and friggin' thumped the ground when the ball wasn't given to her. Do you know what? When I saw France score 5 minutes in, I was a bit like, oh, crap.
Here we come.
And
gates
do you
opened.
Know what? Super impressed that Ireland were able to hold them off for the 85 other minutes. France had a lot of chances, but not loads on target. Courtney Brosnan player of the match, understandably, that tells you what the game was like. France definitely, I think, underestimated Ireland. I heard some of the Irish media say that in the pre-match press conference, they spent 18 minutes, the first 18 minutes, the French press spent asking Hervé Renard about Sweden. So that'll tell you how much they underestimated Ireland.
That's rude. That's really rude.
Well, it shows. They went out and they could only get one past them. So the thing is, Ireland are got, you know, they play a back five, they 5-4-1 set up, difficult to break down. They've got a lot of maturity and kind of experience in that back line. Aoife Mannion and Anna Patton played alongside Quinn and Hayes. And that kind of, it gives you that experience of being able to be switched on and play like that for 90 minutes against a very tough side. So I think that will be difficult for England, because we've seen in the past England struggle a little bit with breaking that down, and especially with the four in front of the five. I guess that would be my thing, would be not to underestimate Ireland. I think they've shown that. You would look at that France team and that front line and think, bloody hell, they should be scoring. But you also then say, we've seen France under Hervé Renard and Corinne Diacre, and they've never quite lived up to their potential either. Mm-hmm. So, you know, an interesting one. And I think Ireland will, huge confidence they'll take from that game. They'll be really up for this game tomorrow, purely out of the kind of history of it all. Not because they're home nation, but because of the history between the Republic of Ireland and England, which I'm quite surprised actually many people don't know. But it's what's going to make it really exciting. They haven't played a competitive match against England since 1987, I think it is.
Before I was born. Great.
Yeah, snap. And in the Aviva Stadium as well, special. It was really special when they played Northern Ireland back in September there. They had over 35,000, I think, at the stadium. So I'm hoping for a similar number, if not more. I know the England fans will travel, you know, and it's exciting. And it's exciting for Ireland as well to see the Lionesses and to see the players. You know, there's a lot of interest in the WSL over here as well. So it's going to be big. It's going to be exciting. There's going to be a huge amount of passion in that squad lining up, I think. And as well, I think the experience of a lot of these Irish players in playing against a lot of these English players week in, week out, the WSL will also stand to them as well.
I think it's, I'm absolutely buzzing for the game. I've like got my set up, I've got my beers ready. I'm absolutely going to be sitting on the couch, as I always do with most of these games now. And I think there's some part of me that's a little bit nervous about this game. I feel like off the back of what happened in the Sweden game, with Sweden kind of being alive to some of the tactics, I think speaking a little bit more about kind of the frustration that I can kind of see creeping into the England side, that things aren't, you know, perfect, I suppose, that they're not sort of getting these results, that fans are sort of asking questions of them. I mean, do you think Ireland are going to be learning from Sweden in terms of ways that they can frustrate England? I mean, like when we talk specifically about sort of like the tactics that Sweden were using, you know, basically taking Ciara Walsh out of the game, limiting her chances, you know, exposing some of the areas and sort of one-on-one situations to the back line. How do you reckon Ireland are going to kind of cope with that? Do you think they're going to adapt their game plan to kind of learn off of what's happened?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're going to set up defensively. I think they'll probably do a 5-4-1 again. But McCabe is, you know, playing higher up. She's playing in that four in front of the back line. I think they're going to try and exploit the space left by the fullbacks, because England are going to play a high line. They'll have to if they're trying to break down a deep block. That will give Ireland opportunities to get in behind and potentially use that space. They started, I think, with Ciara Caruso up front, lone striker. It's going to be about how effective she can be in those moments. You know, it's not an easy task to, when you get those chances few and far between, that you actually are able to put them away. So it'll be interesting to see how Ireland exploit, I think, the back wide areas. And when you've got your likes of Heather Payne and Katie McCabe, they're very good players to try and do that. So that's something England will need to be alive to. But I do think it is going to be a case of Ireland playing defensively and England playing quite high.
So we've got a question in from Layla. She asked us on Twitter, England's midfield were a bit disjointed against Sweden. Who do you think works best with Walsh as the pivot? She said, I thought Clinton and Stanway both kept coming too deep, which left a lack of options further forward. So who does Serena go with in the midfield against Ireland?
She could bring in a Jess Park.
Yeah.
You know, I thought Clinton was great as well. I think, you know, Clinton's another option. I think Stanway struggled. But you could play potentially a Jess Park. She could be an interesting one in there.
She's been amazing for City. I think she has been dropping it. That's the thing with Jess Park, though. She has also been dropping in quite deep for City, picking up the balls, but also, like, she's so progressive. So she's not afraid to kind of, like, do those yards, like, make up the yards, sort of, like, push further forward and then also drop back in. Like, the legs on her, it is, like, Duracell Bunny type vibe. So I do think that kind of energetic spirit, and we've already seen, like, starting Grace Clinton for a game of that magnitude. I think that is Serena's sort of nodding to the fact that she is happy to put her trust and confidence in these sort of younger players. So yeah, I mean,
I think that could be really interesting. You need a, you know, they're going to need those kind of through balls and be able to spot those runs, and I think that will be coming key in the midfield area, will be coming from there, is finding those moments, having your Lauren. This is the thing about when you play Lauren James, say, in a 10, I always find she's really good at finding those through balls and finding those players. But then, you know, we saw what she did and she was playing out in the wing and that ball in across to the Russo goal. So a lot of tools in her armory. But yeah, potentially you could see maybe a Clinton or a Park start tomorrow. And I think that could be a really exciting moment for them. And it could be like the key to unlocking the issues that they were having against Sweden.
Can you imagine if you saw Kiara Keaton in goal?
That'd be unreal, wouldn't it?
I'd lose my mind. I would lose my shit.
I'm really intrigued to see. I don't think Serena Wiegmann will underestimate Ireland in that, in terms of like the lineup. I don't think she's gonna
mess
try
things
new
around.
Things
yeah,
too
yeah.
much. No,
this
and
isn't
I think
friendly.
No, and I think when you're in the group you're in, you can't afford to take any team for granted.
Especially not when you've just drawn your first game. Yeah, for sure.
And you're dealing with this. Now, to be fair, I don't know, maybe the England players don't feel the rivalry in the same way the Ireland players do. Even if there wasn't that rivalry, any of these teams that Ireland are playing, they're the underdogs. So it adds, you know, more to their game. It gives them another level. The fact that it's England gives them another level again. So there's other things that are in contention and are kind of impacting what's going to happen tomorrow as well. So it'll be interesting to see how players deal with that. But I think England might be a little bit more level-headed about it because they're not the underdogs. They're not playing up. They don't maybe see this as big of a rivalry as Ireland do.
All right, I'm putting you to the sword. Score predictions. I think
2-1. 1-0 England, yeah, or maybe 2-1. I'd like to think Ireland could get a goal. And this is the thing, England do concede of late. So it could be a 1-0 or 2-1 to or a 1-1. But I do think I do think England will win it, but I think Ireland might get a goal.
Okay, I think that's fair. I think that's fair and balanced.
I think, you know, what's really important for Ireland, what worried me a bit about when they won Group B comfortably, was that there'd be this kind of expectation, but also kind of almost like, God, we're good, aren't we? Kind of thing from people over here a little bit that, you know, smashed Group B, let's go, lads, kind of thing. And I was a bit worried that going into Group A, you'd come back down with a bang. Mm-hmm. And I actually think, much like the World Cup, where they ended up in the group of death and everyone thought they'd be run over, they actually gave a really good account of themselves. And that's what I'd like to see from Ireland in this league, is that if they do lose, fine. But if they're losing 1-0 to France, you can come away from that and go, we are improving. And that's the main thing. That's what you want to see from, and I've said it before with the home nations, you want to see improvement. And even if you're not necessarily winning these really difficult games, to see the gap closing is the main thing. And that's what gives the teams confidence going forward when they're trying to qualify for major tournaments.
Well, we will wait and see. It all kicks off tomorrow night at the Aviva Stadium, 7:30. Rach, you're obviously going to be there. But where are you going to be this week after Ireland?
God, I come home and then we have the FA Cup semi-finals, do we? Don't we? Yes. Yes.
I don't even know.
So. Chloe, you know not to ask me beyond like the day that I'm on now. Yes, FA Cup semi-final. I'll be doing Manchester United versus Chelsea.
Lovely. Well, I will be watching that game as well, even despite the fact that I'm only looking at Tuesday and again haven't checked my diary further than that. It just doesn't make any sense. Thank you so much for listening. Make sure you join us for a bonus episode on Thursday where I'm joined by the one and only Lucy Rushton. Lucy is the general manager of the New Kids on the Block in the NWSL Bay FC. I spoke to her all about that, how she's helped build the club from scratch, why they went after the likes of pod member Jen Beatty and the vision behind all of those huge, massive, tremendously big signings, including breaking the transfer record, of course. Lucy is also an absolute trailblazer herself as the first woman to be a general manager at an MLS club when she took the reins at DC United. She's a super interesting character and spoke really honestly, so please make sure to give it a listen. In the meantime, you can find us on Instagram and X. I am at Morgie_89, Rach is at Girls on the Ball, and we are at Upfront_pod. You can also find us on YouTube at Upfront Pod. See you on Thursday!
Upfront is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.